Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, I think it was Monday of this week. You were hoping it was already Friday. We mentioned it again yesterday. It is finally Friday, but the news is just as crazy, although we do have a good martini today. How are you?
It's like my traditional closing note, Greg, is say, oh, thank God it's Friday. It's funny when it's not Friday. It's not as funny when it actually is Friday.
Well, the sentiment remains the same. Let's get to our good martini. And for those of us who remember well the 2003 and the years after that, this is a familiar story. ABC News, President Donald Trump is poised to pardon Scooter J. Libby, the former chief of staff to Vice President Dick Cheney, according to sources familiar with the president's thinking. The president has already signed off on the pardon, which is something he has been considering for several months, sources told ABC News. Libby was convicted in 2007 of lying to the FBI and obstruction of justice in the investigation into the leak of the identity of Valerie Plame, a former covert CIA operative. Then President George W. Bush commuted Libby's 30-month sentence, sparing him prison time, but did not pardon him, which angered Cheney greatly at the time, I might add. After Libby claimed that he couldn't have been the source of the leak, multiple people came forward to testify that they learned of Plame's identity from Libby prior to when Libby said he first received the information. At trial, Libby claimed to have simply forgotten that he actually learned about the identity from Cheney a month before he said that he had. So, Jim, we don't know what Scooter Libby got wrong intentionally and what he didn't. Obviously, the jury made a rendering on that. It's a good martini, though, because this issue never should have even gone to a special counsel, because Valerie Plame was not covert when Bob Novak put her name into a column in 2003. And, oh, by the way, he got it from Richard Armitage, not Scooter Libby or Dick Cheney or Karl Rove.
A lot of things about this never quite made sense, Greg. High among them, why did Richard Armitage never get any prosecution or any particular legal concern or legal danger or things like that? It is good that eventually Libby had his sentence commuted. But all in all, it definitely seemed like that there was this adamant insistence that somebody had to pay the price. The media had already invested a lot of column inches, so to speak, into the story of Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame. I believe that is the rabid anti-Semite Valerie Plame, judging by her Twitter feed not that long ago. You know, this is the only person I know from the covert agent, so to speak, which, by the way, she was an analyst, but the only person I've ever seen, you know, taking pictures in Vanity Fair with things like that. So there was a whole bunch of this that never quite added up. And there was this, you know, this nagging sense that there was a need for a scalp. Now, does this make it okay to lie to FBI investigators? No. Does this make it okay to, you know, obstruct justice? No, you know, none of the, you know. But there was always this nagging feeling that, by golly, there was a need for a scalp, and Scooter Libby was going to be the guy who was going to get it. You know, if Dick Cheney was the brain of the Bush administration, then by golly, Scooter Libby was Cheney's brain, you know. This was a high-profile scalp. I was out with a bunch of conservative bloggers last night. Everybody cheered when this came out. There was this nagging sense that Libby had turned into a partisan scapegoat. And you know, the nagging sense was that Scooter Libby, who, by the way, had been the centerpiece of, you know, neocons and all kinds of, you know, wacky, crazy conspiracy theories the entirety of the Bush administration. Joe Wilson had promised that Karl Rove was going to be frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs. I realize I'm taking, you know, readers really down memory lane here, but it's this whole sense of, like, by golly, remember Fitzmas, prosecutor for Patrick Fitzgerald, and oh, he was going to get Rove. We see all these, you know, White House officials coming out in handcuffs. And I believe at one point some reporter had said, oh, Rove has been given 24 hours to get his affairs in order before he's arrested. Many people said, you know, that really doesn't happen. Usually the FBI doesn't go, hey, we're going to arrest you in 24 hours. So if you need to set the DVR or do stock up on milk, stuff like that, don't buy green bananas. But otherwise, get your affairs in order before we arrest you. It doesn't really happen. But, you know, it was reported fairly credulously. 24 hours passed, then 48 hours passed. And it also became very clear, no, there was no basis in that one. This was the atmosphere. And that Scooter Libby basically, you know, they couldn't come up completely empty. They got him a kind of something akin to the Martha Stewart situation. You know, if you don't answer questions honestly to the FBI, they can claim that is the equivalent of perjury and obstruction of justice and things like that. But all in all, really seemed like a case of a guy who the criminalization of political differences. So not something you would have expected. Trump likes to talk about how bad the Bush administration was and how much smarter he was than all of them. The Iraq War, et cetera, et cetera. I didn't get a feeling that he and, you know, Trump and Dick Cheney were particularly warm, fuzzy feelings either. I think a lot of Republicans always had this sense this was a nagging injustice. And so many people will be cheering with good reason that Scooter Libby will have this blot rubbed off of his record.
Yeah, the reason Dick Armitage never got charged is because leaking her name wasn't a crime since she wasn't covert at the time, if she ever was. But to your last point, I wouldn't be surprised if Trump's timing on this, even if he believes he's doing the right thing here, is to point out that this was a reckless special counsel investigation that never should have started in the first place, and it ended up charging people and convicting people and making people's lives miserable over a crime that never actually happened. So if that's where he's going for, try to discredit Mueller and Rosenstein and that sort of thing, I would not be surprised.
The dinner I was at last night, Greg, some people were speculating, do you think Trump is just going to go through anybody who had ever been prosecuted by Mueller in his entire career? Just start handing out pardons like a Pez dispenser.
And I believe Jim Comey was pretty high up at the Justice Department, at least when that investigation began. And I think based on what folks like Victoria Tunzing and Joe DeGeneva say, that he was the one who recommended Fitzgerald. So there's little tentacles that go into this for sure. All right, let's move on to more Jim Comey. We're going to be talking about him in the bad and the crazy. We'll save one of his excerpts for the crazy. But let's talk a little bit about other excerpts here in the bad martini and President Trump's completely predictable response to this, which we'll probably see more tweets about in the coming days. First of all, from ABC News, a little bit of this we already knew, but his description of this is pretty hilarious. Just a week after the president was inaugurated, according to Comey, Trump told him, "I need loyalty. I expect loyalty." Comey writes that to him, the demand was like Sammy the Bull's Cosa Nostra induction ceremony, referring to Salvatore Sammy the Bull Gravano, a former leader of the Gambino crime family whose testimony ultimately helped to convict mob boss John Gotti. Comey responded with silence, he writes in the book, and Trump moved the conversation along. Later in the dinner, Trump returned to the subject, quote, "I need loyalty." Comey writes, he said, "You will always get honesty from me." Trump says, "That's what I want, honest loyalty." And Comey responded, "You will get that from me." Over in the Chicago Tribune, it points out that the book also includes, quote, "strikingly personal jabs at Trump that appear sure to irritate the president." The 6'8" Comey describes Trump as shorter than he expected, with a too long tie and bright white half moons under his eyes that he suggests came from tanning goggles. He also says he made a conscious effort to check the president's hand size, saying it was smaller than mine, but did not seem unusually so. He goes on to write that Donald Trump's presidency threatens much of what is good in this nation and calls the administration a forest fire that can't be contained by ethical leaders within the government. Trump's Twitter response this morning, "James Comey is a proven leaker and liar. Virtually everyone in Washington thought he should be fired for the terrible job he did until he was, in fact, fired. He leaked classified information for which he should be prosecuted. He lied to Congress under oath. He is a weak and untruthful slimeball who was, as time has proven, a terrible director of the FBI. His handling of the crooked Hillary Clinton case and the events surrounding it will go down as one of the worst botched jobs of history." He finishes by saying, "It was my great honor to fire James Comey." So, Jim, their tactics are a little bit different in how they go about it, but the two egos, I don't know how these guys ever fit in the same room with the size of their heads, and I'm pretty sure they deserve each other.
Yeah, I was struck this morning. Apparently, Chris Wallace, host of Fox News Sunday, was asked for his impressions of the excerpts he's seen so far. And he used, I'll just describe it as, he used a term that rhymes with witchy. And I guess you know that this, you know, with the commentary about the size of the president's hands is designed to, you know, jump on Trump's last nerve. The comment about the suggestion that he's tanning and all that kind of stuff. We get it. James Comey can't stand Trump, and it certainly gives the impression that he couldn't stand Trump before Trump was elected president of the United States. It's an interesting thing. When we first started getting the first excerpts out of it, we kind of had this sweat. One of the reasons everyone had such excitement about it was this sense that, okay, we'd heard some of Comey's testimony under oath, his description of some of his meetings after Trump fired him. But this was going to be the full account of Comey. And this expectation we would get something new. The fact that James Comey thinks Trump has no ethics and that he's he lies as easily as he breathes, and he, you know, can't stand the guy, and he, you know, expects loyalty like a mafia. None of this is particularly shocking, right? I'm still waiting to see anything in this book so far that's really surprising. There is one that we will get to in the next martini, but there's just kind of this, you know, this nasty personal tone, which, of course, it's as if the administration learning nothing from Fire and Fury, which, oh, by the way, turned out to, you know, not be accurate or very strongly disputed in a lot of key details. That, you know, the president is now, and he's got to, you know, turn into the Incredible Hulk, and he's got to fume about it. One of the things I addressed in the morning, Joel, it's really fascinating, is we're in the middle of the maelstrom media cycle of James Comey. Greg, you really would get the impression that James Comey made four decisions as FBI director in all the years that he was there. He chose not to prosecute Hillary. He chose to reopen the case 11 days before the election. He chose to close the case 2 days or 3 days or whatever, you know, right before the election. And the initial steps that led to become the Russia investigation. And that was it. Right? You know, now, here's the thing. Comey did make a lot of decisions. And he did say things. If he didn't lie under oath, he's told things to Congress under oath that were not accurate, shall we say. The FBI, you and I have talked many times about all the missed clues and missed signals and known wolves that they've had in cases of terrorism and things like that. Something that has not, sadly, not ended under the current, under Christopher Wray, the current director. They paid, God, it's an ungodly sum to ask somebody to try to hack into the cell phone of the San Bernardino terrorist. There were, if Trump had wanted to fire Comey, based on the performance and the need, saying, you know what, we need a new breath of fresh air. There's a lot of baggage with Comey here. He could have done so, and he could have probably would have been wise to do it before he ended up in this sort of personal dispute with Comey over this. I'd be curious if you could almost track the sales on Amazon. If after he said, you know, slime ball or something like that, did the sales surge or something like that? Right now, President Trump is doing everything that James Comey wants him to do to boost book sales, and the president has so little impulse control. It's not many books that get their own Republican National Committee effort to discredit them, which is, you know, kind of a revealing state about the state of our politics right now. You kind of like, hey, you think the RNC's got some time, money, and effort left over to work on, you know, the midterms and stuff?
You'd think they'd be a little more worried about the midterms than the Jim Comey book, but guess not. Speaking of Jim Comey, let's go to the crazy martini now, because this one is a little bit of an eye-opener. This is the UK Guardian version of the story. James Comey's confidence that Hillary Clinton would win the presidency informed his decision to notify Congress just 11 days before Election Day that an investigation of her emails had been reopened, an act many, including Clinton, believe instead helped usher Donald Trump into the White House. In the book, or at least in the excerpt, the FBI director writes that before he wrote to Congress to say investigators were reviewing a newly acquired batch of Clinton emails, a brilliant and quiet lawyer on his team asked him a pointed question. Should you consider that what you're about to do may help elect Donald Trump president? Comey thanked the lawyer for her question, he writes, and then he answered with a resounding no. What Comey did next, following a July news conference in which he branded Clinton's handling of classified material extremely careless, has left him vulnerable to accusations of having swayed the election. News of his letter to Congress splashed in the headlines as early voting proceeded. Comey writes, assuming as nearly everyone did that Hillary Clinton would be elected president of the United States in less than 2 weeks, what would happen to the FBI, the Justice Department, or her own presidency if it later was revealed after the fact that she was still the subject of an FBI investigation? He later says he still thinks he would have done the same thing, that he ultimately made the right decision. So, Jim, you can obviously sympathize with the fact that it's an awkward time to have to make a decision like that. But the fact that he let the polls decide whether or not he would go public with this, and he was pretty confident she'd win anyway, is more than a little disturbing.
So Comey does his July 5th announcement that despite her being reckless and you know, extraordinarily careless with the handling of, extremely careless was his words, with classified information, she hadn't met the criteria for criminal motive. It's not actually required in the statute, but that's, you know, that's the way he decides to do it. And I talk about it in the morning, Joel. You could kind of understand he did the reluctance to indict the likely Democratic nominee 2 weeks before the nominating convention. And he says, you know what, this is his way of saying, you know what, America, I'm going to give you the facts. You decide whether this is consequential or not. Then he goes, but also in the, so July 7th, I believe, he's up before Congress. And they're asking all kinds of questions about his decision making, and he defends the decision. But in there, he basically makes clear, if there are changes to the status of this investigation, I will inform you. So that's one of the reasons. And you know, Comey can imagine the scenario where he doesn't tell Congress. He's promised this under oath. Two members of Congress, you know, Hillary wins, and then it comes out, oh, by the way, 11 days before the election, the FBI reopened the investigation to her emails because they found new evidence, but they didn't tell the public. I mean, could you imagine the, I probably shouldn't use the term thermonuclear, right? But this would be a, the you-know-what would be hitting the fan an extraordinary level. And people would be saying that Comey had suppressed evidence and hidden, you know, all kind of stuff. So he tells Congress. And of course, once you tell Congress, it's going to end up being informed to the public. Now, obviously, look, within 2 days of, or through two, 3 days before the election, it becomes clear to the FBI, yeah, we went through all the emails on Huma Abedin's computer. Nothing materially affects the decision we've made. Game, set, and match. But when he says, you know, it is entirely possible that because I was making decisions in an environment where Hillary Clinton was sure to be the next president, my concern about making her an illegitimate president by concealing the restart investigation bore greater weight than it would have if the election appeared closer or if Donald Trump was ahead in all polls. But I don't know. That's in his new book. Greg, he's kind of admitting that if the polls had been closer, he might not have informed Congress about the new developments as he promised because he feared it would influence the election and derail her victory. The title of the book is A Higher Loyalty? Are you kidding me? I mean, he's like basically, yeah, you know, maybe the polls did affect my decision. They're not supposed to let the polls are not supposed to make your decision for you. Yeah, there we are. That's so I, you know, as I said, there wasn't much, you know, big news. That is actually, you could say, some dramatic news coming out of this book. It's not particularly flattering for James Comey. That's why I'm kind of saying, you know, this is kind of the inadvertent admission coming out of this. I think, you know, look, we've detailed on this podcast many times all the ways that Trump is kind of not self-aware, and he doesn't realize that what he's saying and doing is harming his own arguments or cause or things like that. This is a case where Comey's basically doing the same, right? Where he's basically trying to say, look, you know, I, looking back, maybe I'm so humble, I will admit, maybe I was too confident that what I was saying would not affect the election in a significant way. If it had, I might not have done it. Well, then basically you're playing favorites, right? Your job as FBI director is to call them as you see them. Be Joe Friday, right? You know, without fear or favor. However you want to shake it out, this is, you know, this is the way things played out. It is kind of fascinating and a little irritating to see Comey, you know, being portrayed as the ultimate Boy Scout or things like that. I do think the discussion of this book is actually harming his reputation more than it is helping, I suspect. I think actually more Americans had a higher opinion of him when they had barely heard of him. Than they do now. But we will see how that shakes out. My guess is, Greg, I believe that Comey has seen his shadow, so we get 6 more weeks of publicity out of this.
Oh, perfect. Absolutely perfect. Jim, seems like about 6 months ago that the FBI raided Michael Cohen's office. It's been quite a week. Talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a wonderful weekend, everyone. Follow us on Twitter. He's at Jim Garrity. I'm at Dateline_DC. And tune in again Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.